Okay, hold on just one moment. Okay, our recording has started, and I'm very pleased today to have with us John Rappaport. And I have followed John a little bit. I don't, you know, think that he was really knew who I was or anything. And probably if he saw me, he'd recognize me. But I have been in the audience a number of times when he's spoken, even way back to when I was at a Whole Life Expo quite a few years ago, and he was speaking there. I think it may have been on AIDS and vaccines and that sort of thing. But John has a wealth of information. I'm sure he could talk on so many topics, you know, all across the board. And I want to just give you a little bit of information on John. He's been working as an investigative reporter for 20 years. He was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. John has written articles on politics, health, medical fraud, and the arts for LA Weekly, Spin Magazine, CBS Health Watch, Stern, In These Times. He has a hosted radio series in Los Angeles and Las Vegas on politics and health. And John has given lectures and seminars all over the world on the question, who really runs the planet? And he's the author of 7 books, including AIDS Incorporated and The Secret Behind Secret Societies. These days, operating from a new website, www.insolutions.info, John remains on the cutting edge of breaking news and its deeper meanings. His recent work on the swine flu pandemic has blown the doors off the lies promoted by the U.S. government and the World Health Organization. John's acute insights and his comedic cuts at the establishment have made him a very busy man. As a speaker, he is in great demand. So with that, I want to present to you John Rappaport. And John, maybe if you would just start with telling us a little bit of who you are and how you came to be doing what you're doing today.
Okay. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me. I started doing reporting in 1982 for the LA Weekly, almost by chance. They needed somebody to write an article. I thought I might be the guy, and there it was. They liked it. They published it. They paid me. I thought, well, this is pretty easy. Let me keep doing this. I had no particular inkling at the time that I was going to be covering many medical stories in the years to come. But it turned out that way eventually. In 1986-87, I was approached by a publisher who asked me if I wanted to write a book on AIDS because he had seen something that I wrote about AIDS. And eventually we made an arrangement and I started to research my first book. And that's what really introduced me to what I call the medical cartel, how it operates, especially in the area of medical research in laboratories, which most medical writers never really get into. I found it fascinating, and I met a lot of people that way. And what I learned was pretty astonishing about the amount of corruption and fraud and deception involved in researching diseases, in bringing drugs to market. And eventually, after 1988, when my book AIDS, Inc. was published, I started to add up everything I had learned and decided that this medical cartel, which is composed of agencies like the FDA and the Centers for Disease Control and pharmaceutical companies and medical schools and doctors, et cetera, et cetera, they had an agenda. Of course, 99.9% of the people involved in cartel operations had no clue about that, but there was an agenda. It was a kind of juggernaut moving in a certain direction that was political. had to do with political control of populations. And I began to look into that much further and came to the conclusion that this could be the biggest threat of the 21st century. And so I have continued my research along that line. And the latest episode of that is swine flu, and here I am.
All right. Well, that is really great. Yeah, I know you just covered it. I was going to ask you, what is the medical cartel? And I'm sure we'll be even hearing more about it as you go along with this. Why do you say it's a cult? Because I know you've called it that.
Well, because it follows the rules of cults. That is, it seeks, although it publicly is very visible, there are things going on behind the scenes at the highest levels where there is an agenda of, as I say, control of populations. But also it follows certain older practices in the sense that, you know, doctors are initiated in a sense. They're indoctrinated with certain kinds of training. They are the foot soldiers of the cult. They learn that there are certain techniques that they use to treat diseases, and there are certain kinds of techniques that they must stay away from, that they only are to follow their training. So this is a kind of brainwashing that occurs in medical schools with doctors, just the way cult members are brainwashed. Also, a cult always will select certain enemies that they will invent and fabricate in order to convince themselves that they're in some kind of a war and that they must win the war. And in the case of the medical cartel, one of the major enemies is what some people would call alternative health, which really translates down to the freedom of an individual citizen to choose what he or she is going to do to maintain and improve his own health. So alternative medicine, nutritional supplements, traditional herbal medicines, and so on, these are all considered to be the enemy, and they must be defeated by any means possible. And so you begin to see that this is rather cultish behavior. It's not scientific at all. And the biggest enemy, of course, of the medical cartel, according to them, is the germ. This is the invisible thing that they are always fighting and trying to kill and drug into submission and so forth. And the more that I began to look into the research, germ research, the more I began to see how fraudulent it really was and how this was their version of Satan, that in fact they were propping up the whole idea of the invisible virus as the mortal enemy that must be destroyed. And in the process of doing that, they have really endangered the lives of millions of people, which I can go on to describe in other ways. But that's how, for example, you could consider that the medical cartel is a kind of cult.
Okay, that makes sense. It really does. It fits the definition. I want to move on to some other questions too, but we do have a question from that came in online from Beth in Loveland, Ohio, if we might entertain that. Beth asks, I have Hashimoto's thyroiditis. My thyroid is almost gone, eaten up by my body's autoimmune disease. The government has shut down the production of all but two companies that produce the natural form of thyroid hormone. For no apparent reason, they pulled the licenses from all but two companies. Do I need to move to a state that still has the last two companies operating that produce the natural hormone, Texas or Arizona, or do I have to find out how to manufacture my own hormone in my backyard? Is there any way to get the government out of the way for producing natural thyroid hormone?
Well, that's a very specific and kind of technical question. You know, I can only say what I would do in a situation like that. If I were convinced that only two companies could give me what I need, I would do whatever it takes to get it. I mean, if it required moving, that's what I would do. I don't know that that's the case, but I mean, if that is the case, then if it were my choice, that's the choice that I would make. You know, as to whether or not there are other solutions in terms of your own health, I don't have a good answer to that. I'm assuming you've researched that yourself extensively, but that's the best answer I can give you. And I am aware that other companies have been shut down, as you say. I find that curious, to say the least, because, as I recall, I didn't find great reasons for that. You know, in other words, was it massive plant factory contamination? Or I don't recall reading that that was the case. It seemed to me at the time, when I read a couple of articles about this, that it was just another attempt at gaining monopolistic control by certain pharmaceutical companies, because pharmaceutical companies always like to synthesize a product because then they can patent it, you see. If you're dealing with something that exists in a more natural form, and I would take the whole field of herbs as an example of that, there's no profit to be made in that. Can't really patent an herb. But if you make a derivative, then you certainly can do that. And if you synthesize it or you derive something from it, patents are possible. And that's what pharmaceutical companies are after. And that is one of the reasons, or one of the strategies, for attempting to destroy the natural nutritional supplement industry, or to take it over, because that's a threat to the medical cartel. They want control of everything. And so they always favor the synthetic forms of various kinds of treatments. And you've, I believe, mentioned an area where that is the case.
Okay, great. That's good. What underlies the medical approach to human suffering and disease? What's the underpin of that whole thing?
Well, that's a big question. Well, I would say that here's what you've got. Medical science has made tremendous strides in the area of acute crisis, trauma, catastrophic care medicine, when it's done right, when it's done in the right circumstances. You're lying on the street from an accident. The right doctors can do the best job of putting you back together. There are other acute crisis situations in which you would want to be in the hands of a good doctor. That's where the profession has really made its bones. And there's a reason behind that, because there's a very obvious test. Does the patient live or does the patient die? You know, and if the kind of treatment that you're doing to resolve a trauma incident results in more deaths than people who remain alive, then that's not going to work. That's not going to fly. However, what's happened is that the entire medical profession, in terms of its PR, has attempted to take that victory in crisis medicine and claim that the same kind of success rate applies over the whole range of medical treatment, which is a complete fabrication, especially in the area of infectious diseases and chronic diseases. That's not the case at all. And cruel as it is to say, when you look at what medical profession has been doing in those areas, it tends to boil down to this. They treat. They don't particularly cure. They treat, and they treat, and they treat, and they treat. And very often the drugs that they use to treat are toxic and have their own effects. And then those effects are often diagnosed as another kind of illness, which requires more drugs and more treatment. And that is the theme, which I believe answers your question here about the underlying approach. And what it also means is that if, for example, tomorrow some lone researcher in a laboratory discovered a cure for all cancers that was available, he would be up against a multi-billion-dollar industry dedicated to treating cancer. And there would be zero chance that the medical establishment would welcome with open arms that treatment that actually cured cancer. In fact, they would do everything in their power to divert it, to make sure it never came to market. So that gives you another clue. And the third thing I would say is that the medical profession is in the business of drugging germs. Oh, you've got germs. Oh, there are germs. Oh, watch out for the germs. We have a drug which is going to kill the germs, and we're going to give it to you. And we have many drugs to kill many germs, and we give those out. And yes, in certain very acute situations where the patient's life and health are threatened right now, one or more of those drugs could be very useful, for example, to dispel an infection or to help bring it down or a very high fever. But all in all, absolutely not. That is a very delusionary approach to treatment, but that gives you some of the threads of the medical approach to disease.
Yeah, it really seems like that the person, the hypothetical person that you're talking about, if they come up with a cure for cancer or any major disease, or they, you know, come up with some miracle, whatever, they might even all of a sudden have an accident and no longer be with us, or have some terrible
or drag into court.
Yeah, into
this
court.
This has actually happened on a number of occasions, and I believe his first name is William Koch, K-O-C-H. There are a few websites. You can look him up. He developed a treatment for cancer called glyoxylide in the early part of the 20th century. And by many accounts, it was dramatically successful, both in animals, not just for cancer in animals, but for cancer in humans. And he was dragged through the courts in America. I believe that he ultimately won his court cases, but he eventually left the country. And, you know, to be able to find his treatment today is nearly impossible. So, yes, there are instances where, in fact, this has been done.
I can imagine the effect of someone mysteriously coming to visit you and recounting in detail the whereabouts of your children throughout the day. At certain times they were here and there, and they were picked up here and there. What, they dropped off at a certain time. They go to this practice. They do this. They do that. Whatever it may be, and you know, making it clear that you wouldn't want anything to happen to your children. That can be very frightening.
Oh, that would be very frightening. Yes, but you know, pardon?
I said
I've heard of such.
Recount those things before.
Yes.
Other instances.
Well, you know, to me, the most discouraging thing is that under the current system, they don't even need to do that because the FDA is the gateway. No drug can be sold in the United States, medical drug, without approval by the FDA. The FDA, as I've shown in chapter and verse in the past, is such a corrupt organization with such close ties to pharmaceutical companies that such a treatment would never get through the FDA. Not only that, of course, it would be ridiculed. The inventor would be ridiculed, discredited as a lunatic or as some kind of charlatan. And the treatment would never see the light of day. If it persisted as a treatment in the underground somehow, then you might see more drastic means employed. But the system itself is now completely rigged to keep such treatments from coming to market.
Yes. I have also another question from Beth in Loveland, Ohio. She says, thank you for covering my question. She says, Arizona, here we come. I guess she's indicating she's going to move to Arizona or something. I wonder how we can help the remaining two companies to continue operating and protect them from having their licenses pulled. What can the average citizen do to support mom-and-pop pharmaceutical companies, lobby the state to pass a bill protecting the pharmaceutical mom-and-pop stores?
Yeah, it's another tough question. Without going into a whole lot of detail, the best suggestion that I have is to form a group. A group has a fighting chance, and the group has a name, Citizens for such and such and so, you see. And you begin to have, you know, active people in the group, people who believe that a certain thing ought to happen or a certain thing ought to be kept from happening. And they begin to employ strategies, PR, relationships with reporters, lobbying, politicians, et cetera, trying to bring information to light and also increasing the size of the group so that they become a formidable force. And therefore, not so easily swept aside as a lone individual. So basically, that's the kind of strategy that I would suggest. And of course, with the internet now, there's a greater chance that you'll find like-minded people who would be willing to be part of such a group and to actually do things. You've got to think strategically if you're after an objective like that.
Absolutely. It seems to me that what you're saying here is that unless a treatment is something that could be extended and ongoing, if it involves, you know, continually drugging, adding more and more drugs into the mix, or cutting, surgery of some type, or, you know, ongoing treatment, it's just not of interest. It has no relevance to what the medical cartel's intent is really all about.
That's correct.
That kind of,
and that goes back into medical schools. That's the training, you see. And here's where we get into the fraud in a deep way, because medical students are trained to think, well, if we don't find any studies on a particular drug, then it's worthless. Couldn't be useful because there's no scientific basis for using it. But you see, what I've shown, and I think it's time to roll out some numbers here because we've really been kind of skirting the edge of this, but I've been pushing this for a long time, and I think other people ought to push it too, and they'll find a couple of articles at my site, insolutions.info, about this. On July 26, 2000, the Journal of the American Medical Association, this is about as prestigious a journal as you can find in terms of conventional medicine. They published a landmark study by Barbara Starfield, who was at the time associated with the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. Also, can't get any more establishment than that School of Public Health. And the study was called, Is U.S. Health Really the Best in the World? And so, here are the figures that Starfield put forward. She said every year in the United States, there are 12,000 deaths from unnecessary surgeries, 7,000 deaths from medication errors in hospitals, 20,000 deaths from other errors in hospitals, 80,000 deaths from infections acquired in hospitals, and here's the big one, 106,000 deaths from FDA-approved, correctly prescribed medicines. So the total of medically caused deaths in the U.S. every year is 225,000, which makes the medical system the third leading cause of death in America behind heart disease and cancer. Not only that, but other information soon came to light indicating that 2.1 million people in America every year are hospitalized as a result of reactions to FDA-approved medicines, and annually 36 million serious adverse reactions to those drugs occur. Now, those are very startling, astonishing figures, and they come from that study and other very reputable type information. So this was a case where there was a leak in the system. Now, the leak was quickly closed because media did not really pick up on this in any major way. There were no really serious investigations. Congress didn't get into an uproar about it. Nothing really happened. Nobody was fired. Nobody was punished. Business as usual, you see. But now, as I did, and surprisingly few other people I found in the journalist profession did, I started to make some inferences from these horrific figures. For example, the FDA is a criminal agency because if 106,000 people every year in the United States die from medical drugs that are correctly prescribed, who approved those drugs as being safe and effective in the first place? The FDA. That's the only way they get to market. And, of course, the pharmaceutical companies are to blame, too. But as far as government is concerned, you're looking at the FDA. So they have blood on their hands, serious blood, because if you look at 10 years and stretch it out, you're now talking about over a million deaths. A million deaths. Now, if you were to take the conventional, and I know some people are falling off their chairs here, but I'm going to keep going. If you were to take the conventionally offered figures, global figures now I'm talking about, of deaths from swine flu in the last 8 months, you're looking at 8,000 deaths. That's what's reported by the World Health Organization. And if you stretch that out to a year, maybe you get something on the order of 13, 14,000 deaths. Well, they're calling that a pandemic. They're going hysterical about that. They're talking about trying to vaccinate, you know, anything that moves. They're saying that this is a threat to the human population of the planet. But when you actually look at their own figures, it's nothing compared with what I've just given you. So what's going on there? See, what is the real agenda here? It's certainly not to save life, because if that were the agenda, then the medical system would police its own, because its own, in America only, is killing 225,000 people a year, every year, like clockwork. Now you begin to get into the heart of the matter and what's really going on here, and what must be the agenda. So that's really the first, shot off the bow that I would fire here in trying to make people aware of what's going on with the medical cartel.
Okay. We have Phil from London, England, has a question. The plan is to introduce Codex Alimentarius worldwide, which will classify every natural supplement as illegal under Napoleonic law, where everything is declared illegal unless approved. DSHEA will be abolished and all supplements will be prescription only. Of course, the nutrient levels will be lowered to a point where they will be worthless. The time has come to fight. Best wishes as always, Phil from England.
Yes,
do you have any comment on
I'm familiar with the Codex, which is a kind of agency associated with the United Nations. It's an intricate bureaucratic structure, but they have power, and they're certainly not an American agency. Now, they have had meetings over the years to come to the climax of deciding that they want to be the agency that has control over nutritional supplements for the planet. Now, the United States would have to sign on to this. And it's a war. It's a struggle. What I'm saying here is that it's not a done deal, that this is definitely going to happen in the United States. We've seen signs of it already in Europe, where in certain places you can't get, for example, vitamin C above a certain potency, or in order to get a certain nutrient, you have to go to a doctor for a prescription as if it's a drug. So we see the signs of it for sure. But the battle is on in the United States. And the reason I say it's a battle is because there are millions of people in the United States who are making use of some form of alternative health, whether it's an alternative doctor or it's going to the health food store or now even the supermarket and buying supplements and using them to improve their own health. And the government is fully aware in the United States that if tomorrow some sort of legislation was passed or a treaty was signed or an edict came down, that from this moment on, you would only be able to get the following supplements and only at this potency, and now all supplements are going to be drugs, that there would be a revolution, plain and simple. So the approach of the medical cartel and the governments with which it is associated and agencies like the Codex is what is called gradualism, to chip away and chip away and chip away and so on and so forth at this until over time the population is softened up enough and by degrees certain steps have been taken so that when the final step is taken it doesn't look as drastic as it would if suddenly it all happened tomorrow. So far, that has been the strategy. Now, I also have to just mention briefly the Obama health plan, because unlike other people who are involved in alternative health who actually believe, having lost their minds completely, that this is going to be a good deal for them, I'm looking up the road. And I'm seeing what's going to happen if this bill in its present form is passed. A panel is going to be appointed. And this special expert panel, under the direction of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, is going to determine what treatments will be permitted under this umbrella insurance plan and what treatments will not. Well, it is quite obvious, based on the track record of the government and the medical cartel, that up the road, what they are looking to do with this panel, among other things, is to narrow down the scope of permitted alternative treatments for anything in health practitioners' offices. I'm talking chiropractors, acupuncturists, nutritionists, and so forth, and also to narrow down what supplements are available to the public. That this is yet another vector of strategy along which they're going to try to destroy people who want to be responsible for their own health and who don't want to be slave patients from cradle to grave undergoing drug treatment, one drug after another, for the entirety of their lives. So I point out these other factors around this comment, which is a good comment.
Very good. I want to remind everyone that we're speaking with John Rappaport about the medical cartel. And if you do at any time have a question for John, then if you have called in on the phone bridge line, just hit *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll see that you would like to have your line unmuted and do so. If you are online and you're hearing us via the internet, there's a question box on that same page. Just go ahead and scroll down to it, enter your question, hit submit, and we'll see that and be able to enter it into the conversation. And I want to move to another question that I was wondering about, because we just barely touched on it, but one of the questions that I think so many of us wonder about: are all of these recent epidemics real, and what is their purpose?
Okay, good question. The answer is they're all fake. And I will give you the numbers sitting right on my screen. Let's think about the five most recent so-called epidemics since roughly 1999. Now, I'm going to give you the totals for all of them, and these are global totals of deaths, with the one exception of West Nile, which is U.S. only, because I couldn't find any good figures globally. So these are totals since the beginning up until now. SARS, 774 deaths. West Nile, 1,159 deaths. That would be in the U.S. Bird flu, 262 deaths. Smallpox, remember the imminent terrorist threat several years ago, zero deaths. Swine flu, thus far, 8,000 deaths. So, let me give you a little perspective here. According to the World Health Organization, every year in the world, 250,000 to 500,000 people die of ordinary flu-like illness. This is not swine flu, not bird flu, not any of those other flus with fancy names, just the ordinary flu that you type illness that you've known about since you were a kid. Every year, 250,000 to 500,000 people around the world die of that. No one ever says it's a pandemic or an epidemic or something horrible. The media doesn't get hysterical about it. But these other little chintzy episodes, relatively speaking, suddenly become a very big deal. So by the numbers alone, these are phony. They're fake, completely phony and completely fake. They don't amount to a hill of beans relative to what really kills people in huge numbers around the world all the time, every year, you see. So that's the first answer. So what's the agenda then? Well, the agenda is basically control. And I'll try to boil down how it works, because I could talk for a couple of hours about this alone. The World Health Organization, which is an agency of the United Nations, and other associated public health agencies around the world, like the CDC, are trying to scare the world into thinking that we are experiencing a wave of epidemics and pandemics, that it's getting worse, and that citizens need to knuckle under to the edicts and dictates and commands and suggestions of medical agencies about getting vaccinated, about taking drugs, about, in some countries at some times, for example, quarantines. Can't assemble on the street in the Ukraine, for example, in parts of the Ukraine right now. Shouldn't travel into the city of Toronto by air. Remember that one with SARS? Shut down the whole city for perhaps a couple months there. Cost the city of Toronto, I mean, in terms of business and so forth, several billion dollars. Nary a peep from Toronto. I was involved with people up there at the time. There was talk of a lawsuit against the World Health Organization, but it never materialized. These are like test runs, you might say. Can we get citizens to knuckle under? Can we get them to do what we want to do? For a couple of reasons. Because up the road, there may well be a declaration of a bigger threat, you see. And bigger numbers of people dying which may or may not have anything to do with disease, because there are a lot of ways to kill people. But you can say it's a virus, and nobody's going to peep. And then you've got people under your control. You've got no Bill of Rights. You've got essentially a medical dictatorship. The World Health Organization is the only agency of the United Nations outside of the environmental wing of the United Nations that has any success at all in the world in exerting control. They want to create a permanent medical dictatorship around the world. And if you now, and I'm going to now try to paint in the bigger aspects of the picture that are much harder to see. What they're eventually looking to do is to make every citizen of the planet a medical patient from cradle to grave, who will be diagnosed with a certain number of diseases and also mental disorders during his or her lifetime, and will receive heavy medical treatment in the form of drugs, surgery, radiation, etc., for those diseases, thereby enormously increasing the profits of the pharmaceutical companies, but also controlling the citizenry, because you have to remember what happens to a person who is given, let's say, 15 or 20 very toxic drugs over the course of 20 or 30 years. They become weak. They become confused. They become passive. They become uncertain. They become unhealthy. They become dependent. They are not strong. They are not free. At that point, you can pretty much order them around and tell them anything you want to, and they'll do it. That's the extreme version of what I'm talking about here. That would be the unspoken and ultimate aim. And these little phony epidemics are test runs. Let's see what happens. And parenthetically, I have to tell you, swine flu has been a total failure. People in hordes are staying away from the vaccine, not just in the United States, but all around the world. So they have a long way to go in that respect. They're not getting compliance anywhere on the level that they imagined they might. But they keep trying. They're not going to stop. And there's one other vector that I have to bring up here, because this is very important. You've probably noticed, no matter where you are in the world, that over the last 15 to 20 years, there's a whole lot of PR and propaganda about making sure that you get treated for diseases, that you take certain vaccines to prevent certain things from happening, that mental disorders are no longer a stigma, that there are miraculous treatments and that they should be thought of on the level of diabetes. It's just another thing. You go to your psychiatrist, he writes out a prescription. In other words, an amazing amount of PR aimed at convincing people that they should really live their lives under the medical umbrella and that they should take whatever their doctor gives them. And drug advertising on television, of course, is run completely rampant. This all feeds into this ultimate agenda that I'm talking about here. So that what you've got on a social level is people who always talk about their diseases. They compare diseases, they compare treatments, they compare doctors, they wear these disease labels like badges of honor. Oh, well, and I've got so-and-so. Oh, really? Well, this has always been the case ever since the medical profession came into being in modern times, but it's accelerated. And it's accelerated particularly in the psychiatric area. Oh, well, I have bipolar. Oh, well, wonderful. I have clinical depression. Oh, well, my son has ADHD. You see? And these disorders are not diagnosed by any definitive biological or chemical test. None of them. That's another shocker. They're really put together by committees of psychiatrists who will take lists of symptoms and behaviors and weld them into disease labels and descriptions, which are then entered into a book called the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistics Manual, that is the Bible of the profession. In other words, as we see the expansion of all of this, these disorders are literally being invented. And, of course, each one has drug treatments, and these drugs are toxic, and their results are uncertain in terms of behavior. You get incredible manic behavior, you get violence, you get suicide, you get all kinds of things happening. So I'm painting you a picture here of the way that these last four or five or six little so-called epidemics are just a small part of a much, much larger agenda. Again, 99.9% of the people involved have absolutely no clue as to the direction of where this is going, you know, on into the 21st century. But it's going. And there are certain agencies that are promoting it. And at one level, the World Health Organization is one of those agencies. In their eyes, really adds up to more and more medical control over the population under their leadership, which they love because it gives them more prestige, it gives them more money, it gives them more everything that they want. But I'm trying to paint the bigger picture for you. So that's an answer to your question. What's the agenda behind these epidemics?
Okay. We do have, we have in Chicago, Illinois, what it says here is maybe it's an abbreviation for Near Search Incorporated. I'm going to unmute your line. Did you have a question?
Is that me?
It says Near Search Incorporated in Chicago,
Illinois. Oh, yes, that's
Illinois.
Me. That's me, you? Right, yeah. And our, I have a question. A brief preamble prior to the question is that I think that we have, first of all, most highly endorsed and camouflaged drugs out there. One example was the sugar-coated cereals that promoted antioxidants, whether it be the hormonal polluted milks that are mandatory to kids growing up, sugar, flour, all of that crap that's making people sick, okay? First of all, which is the food, lined in kitchen cabinets and refrigerators all over, okay? But there are tremendous value to what you're saying, okay, and yes, there are, but the point that, I guess what the question I'm asking is that I understand what the problems are, I understand what is being controlled and what is being, by our government, okay, and it's a very much of a profit center, okay, as far as making money, as opposed to, there's no money in a cure, okay. But the question is where does a person go, or where do people go, okay? I'm not interested in starting up my own particular healthy knowledge center here. I just want to know where I can go for the most, for resolution for this, which are basically the alternative choices.
Well, what I'm trying to tell you is that you're good to go as long as these alternative choices continue to exist.
But where, what are they? Is what I'm saying is,
well, I mean,
we have to hunt. I have to hunt to find a napper, to find a you know, a natural doctor. Okay.
Well,
in the city of Chicago, the third largest metro in the country.
Well, listen, I don't know. I can't tell you about Chicago. I can tell you that if you lived in California, you'd have probably 100,000 choices.
Of course.
And I refuse to believe that there are no nutritionists in Chicago. I don't know the names of them, and I can't give recommendations and so on. But nutritional practice, for example, there are certain practitioners who can get a really good line on what's going on with a person and can give nutritional recommendations that are quite useful in improving one's health. And then there is independent research and about 6 million books that you could read that would tell you, if you wanted to do it on your own, the kinds of supplements that you might want to be taking that you could buy in health food stores, of which there are a number in Chicago.
I understand that. I'm fully aware of that.
And if you want to buy organic food, you could do that too.
I do that
would be
already.
Relatively
there
free from
certain
pesticides.
Supplements
so,
and, et cetera, that I,
yeah.
I also take.
So I don't know exactly what you want.
Well, I'm just saying is that, yeah, in Arizona and in California, there's tremendous resources as far as naturopaths and stuff, but it's very difficult to find them in certain cities in the Midwest, like Chicago and the East Coast.
Yeah, well,
very
if
much
that were the case, and I'm not saying that I necessarily agree, but if that were the case, then I would say, well, if I lived in Chicago and I wanted a good nutritional doctor and I couldn't find one, then where would I, you know, what would I do? I would get out of Chicago if that were important enough to me. I mean, come on.
Oh, you're being unrealistic. Come on.
Well, then what do you want from me? Do you want me to say you have no hope?
No, of course.
You're
that's
giving,
not what I'm saying.
Don't you see what you're doing
you,
here?
No,
you're giving
already,
me a question.
You're already,
no, wait
giving,
a minute,
me, you're already telling me.
You're giving me a question that has no answer.
Right.
You're saying you want something that doesn't exist in Chicago, and you're asking me what I can do for you. I can't do anything if, in fact, there is nothing in Chicago. You know? Functional and nutritional medical testing, Chicago holistic doctor. I'm looking on Google right now. Okay. Chicago physician provides holistic medicine, et cetera, acupuncture, women's health, nutrition, weight loss, et cetera. I'm only on the first page here. Okay. Chicago diet and nutrition medical doctor, et cetera, et cetera. Dr. Keith Block's alternative treatments, vice president of a Chicago chapter, yak, yak, yak. Okay. This page is devoted to Midwest nutritional services. Find a local doctor in Chicago, et cetera, MediHerb products, nutritional strategies. They're all over the place. Google it, Chicago, alternative practitioners, chiropractors, nutritionists. You'll find them. I'm looking here, and I see five or six right off the block. So it's there. It's there. I understand your frustration because, and especially when it comes to food. And the thing that I would mention here is that when you research the biggest chemical companies, you find, yes, they're the ones selling pesticides. They're also drug companies selling the pharmaceuticals. They're also genetically engineered seed companies that are promoting the food that has lower nutritional values. They're also the companies that are putting the BGH hormones into the milk. It's the same basic companies, the gigantic mega corporations. Absolutely, they've got a stranglehold on this. But for now, these alternatives do exist, and we have to do whatever we can to protect them. So I understand your frustration, but I believe that you've got, for the moment, some solutions in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, I believe that she is no longer on the call. No, if it dropped or whatnot. But I would say that I've been shocked every time that I want to know something, and I think, oh, but Google wouldn't help. And then I Google it anyway. I find mounds and mounds of information on what I'm looking for information on. I always say, when in doubt, Google. If you want to know something, try Googling it. You'd be absolutely amazed.
And it'll lead you to places, you know, that you didn't know that you would get to because, you know, you start skipping around through links and you find things. So I think she hung up when I began to show her that Chicago was a place that was more friendly than she thought it was. I don't know what that was really all about, to tell you the truth, but hopefully she will find some nutritional help in Chicago because it's there.
Yes.
And
yes.
Her objection to tell me that she should move, that that's not realistic, wow, I think the most realistic thing is you can find it in Chicago. I could make up a song.
Yeah, I think so. Beth in Loveland, Ohio says, you're right on with what you say. Thank you for reinforcing my understanding about health issues. Keep talking and informing. You are needed and appreciated, all of you. So she's encouraging you.
I appreciate that. Thanks, Beth.
Yes, and then I would, you know, I just, hearing all of this, of course, it's so many of us have known this type of stuff for a while, And it just to hear it laid out again is always disturbing. But there's a lot of hope in it, too, because I think people are waking up at a faster rate than we've ever seen them, and they're inquiring into what the heck is really going on, and many of them are becoming activists. But just how much damage do you think the medical cartel really does? How far do you think it goes?
Well, you heard my figures. Kills 225,000 people, for starters, in the United States every year, according to their own figures. That would exceed 1 million in 5 years. So that's a significant kind of damage. I mean, can you imagine what hay the CDC would be making out of swine flu if they said, it's actually killed 225,000 people this year, and we expect it to do the same thing next year? The country would literally be locked down right now, martial law. But in fact, it's going on all the time, except the perpetrator is the U.S. medical system. So that gives you an inkling, for starters, about the amount of damage that they're doing. And then to the degree that they divert people from the idea that one can take responsibility for one's own health to a large extent and improve their immune systems, which is the key, so that these so-called diseases and germs and infections and so forth really just kind of bounce off, by and large. That's a big hindrance as well, because the theme here of the medical system is we are the only ones who can offer a diagnosis of what's wrong with you, and we're the only ones who can treat it. Well, I would say that's a major obstruction and a major crime. To tell people that, to try to indoctrinate them with that idea, you've got these pharmaceutical companies that are out there looking for market share all the time. That's what they do. We can exploit this, we can do that. Here's a whole area we didn't even think we could get into, but lo and behold, here we are. 35 years ago, and you'll find an article on my site, insolutions.info, about this. 35 years ago, the psychiatric profession in America was dying. People were just not interested. The pharmaceutical business came along, and I'll sort of shortcut the whole process by simply saying they made a deal. They resuscitated the profession. What they did was they began to finance their conferences, began to advertise heavily in the journals, which propped up the journals with big money. They did whatever they could in order to essentially refinance psychiatry, because they realized that psychiatrists who sit on these committees can invent mental disorders by the truckload, with new labels, new descriptions, and for every new disorder comes a new drug or five new drugs or whatever. This was a market exploitation by mega corporations. That's how they operate. So you're asking about more damage. This is more damage because the drugs are toxic, heavily, heavily toxic. If you want to read one of the best books on medical manipulation ever written, pick up a copy of Toxic Psychiatry by Peter Bregin, Breggin, MD, psychiatrist, who turned around and exposed his entire profession. And he mainly targets the drugs, and he explains their toxicity and their effects and so on. So that answers, again, your question, how much damage are they doing? It's unbelievable how much damage they're doing. I could go on chapter and verse for a very long time, but that gives you a sense of it.
Yeah, it's an amazing control of the population in so many insidious ways. I wanted to be sure that you give out whatever contact information, be it phone number, email, websites, whatever information that you'd like to share, so that people can make sure and follow up on the things you've been sharing.
Yes. The website, again, is www.insolutions, I'll spell it, I-N as in Nancy, and then the word solutions. It's all one word, insolutions, S-O-L-U-T-I-O-N-S .info. And when you go to the site, which we've just really put up, you'll find some videos by me about swine flu and other related subjects. You'll find a whole host of articles about medical subjects, including swine flu. And if you keep coming back, you will see new videos and articles appearing frequently. We just try to keep everybody up on what's happening. And we're going to expand that site. I have another site called www.nomorefakenews.com. Many articles there as well as audio seminars that I've done. And I should give out another website address while you're being so generous with me, because this site is generous toward me. I publish some of my articles there, and that is www.pandemic, with a capital P, flu, with a capital F, online, with a capital O, .com. Pandemicfluonline.com, exposing some of the lies of medical establishment with the so-called pandemic. So those are the best ways to continue to follow my work, and I hope that you all visit us.
Can they get your books through your site, either of your sites?
My books are going to be coming available there. Since we just put up the site, they're not yet. Several audio seminars are available there at insolutions.info. In the next week or two, I believe a few of the books will begin to become available. AIDS, Inc., Secret Behind Secret Societies, The Ownership of All Life, and Oklahoma Bombing, The Suppressed Truth.
Okay. It sounds like that your research delves into a lot of different areas, even though you've really focused a lot on the whole medical cartel arena.
It has.
Okay. And I'm wondering, if someone wanted to email you, they can find that information through your websites. Is that correct?
Yes. I'll give you an email address connected with one of my sites, John Rappaport at nomorefakenews.com.
Okay. And then is there, in fact, for those that for whatever reason aren't online or aren't that savvy with online and want to call, is there a number to call?
Not really. You know, I used to give out a phone number, but it's not a great idea because I just got flooded with so many calls and I wasn't able to answer them. So
sure.
That's not a great idea.
That's fine.
I do try to answer all the emails if I can, but it's easier for me that way than by phone.
Okay. And I'm wondering, I know we've come past the hour point, but with I don't know what your schedule is, but if you have a few more minutes,
sure.
I'd entertain another question or two. One of the things I was wondering about myself was, you've mentioned the century of the brain. What is the century of the brain?
Well, in a nutshell, the century of the brain, meaning this century, what we're going to see is a big upswing in medical research in trying to discover more about how the brain functions. And on the surface, this is all going to be labeled disease research. Well, what we want to do is to cure disorders of the brain. And so we have to understand more about it. And so what you get is research centers all over the world doing compartmentalized research on different aspects and so on and so forth. But when you look at all of that research combined, you see that it also, to the degree that it ever becomes more and more successful, and gives an outlet for control of the brain. Drugs that would stimulate certain centers in the brain and repress other centers of the brain that would create certain kinds of behaviors and repress other kinds of behaviors. For example, I guess the best novel on this would be Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, because in that science fiction novel that he wrote so many years ago, the idea was that in this utopian society, the ultimate backup was a drug called Soma. And if you were to look at this from the point of view of the brain, that drug stimulated pleasure centers in the brain. Therefore, making people content with whatever they had, you see. So that would be the ultimate wet dream of those who attempt to control populations and societies, to be able to say, well, we have a drug that's going to keep people in check and make them reasonably content or happy, by a very narrow definition of happy, regardless of external circumstances. Okay? And so that would be the ideal toward which they would be working to achieve such a thing. And it could be a drug, it could be some sort of electromagnetic technology, it could be a combination of these. But when you really now get into the future of where the medical cartel would be going in conjunction with organizations that want to run the planet, that's where you would be looking. Because that's where they think they will find answers. I also should say, and this I think is very important, that this kind of insidious research stems from a philosophy, really, of materialism. In other words, there is nothing to know about the human being worth knowing except really the brain. Every thought, every impulse, every emotion, every feeling, every sensation, every dream, every desire is all wrapped up in brain activity. There is nothing else. And therefore, he who controls that controls the world. That philosophy lies at the heart of everything, really, that the medical cartel is doing that is inhuman. The other philosophy, and there are many versions of this, and I'm not going to try to argue one against the other, is that the human being is basically a spiritual human being. In other words, there are aspects of a human being that are not material, that can't be reduced down to electrons and protons and neutrons circulating in space and blah, 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 blah. And that freedom is one of the major intrinsic attributes of the spiritual human being. And that freedom is not really, I mean, you could say it's a right, but that even misses the mark. Freedom is. It can be stomped upon. It can be repressed, but it's there. It's always there. And this is what we are seeking, to enhance that freedom. And when we're talking about the whole area of the medical arena, we're talking about enhancing that area so that everyone has a free choice. How do I maintain and improve my health? That's up to me. I can do whatever I want to. I have that intrinsic freedom. And no one has the right to impinge on it and force me to do anything that I want. And no one has the right to eliminate or narrow down my choices by trying to remove my access to whatever it is that I judge to be optimal and useful for my own health. So there's a big answer to your question.
Great. Well, it seems also that the model that you're talking about of manipulation and what you might call mass programming or conditioning or hypnosis, if you will, through the media and through all the other bits of information that's going out towards us, that that this same type of model, you can apply it to all sorts of different arenas in what we're involved with today, no matter whether it's foreign affairs, the whole war thing, no matter whether it's you know, the war on terror hysteria and the infringement of our civil liberties there, the control of people, or whatever you can look at and apply the same type of, it's the same procedure they're using in all strata of society. Do you pretty much concur with that as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm in agreement with you completely. Money, wherever you look, energy, it's the same strategy. And it's the same issue, and it's the same, the terms of the struggle are the same. Are we going to be free, or are we going to be slaves? What's the decision? That's what's there, written large right in front of us. And yes, so I'm absolutely in agreement with you.
Great. Well, I want to also mention to everyone, we had an issue a few issues back. It was actually issue number 13, and it was our alternative energy issue, and I invite people to check that out. We've actually got, you can subscribe online for free, just going to republicmagazine.com and then entering in your email address and your first name, and we'll send each issue out as it comes in an electronic page-turning edition, the link for that. But this issue that I was talking about, we had all sorts of things, some of what we've been talking about today. I mean, everything from the exposing fluoridation to the truth about bottled water, malicious acts and propaganda, the big pharma plague, oxygenation, cancer prevention, PEOs, exposing the universal health care scam, home birth versus hospital, educating before you vaccinate, aspartame, exposing that, Codex Alimentarius, which we touched on today, alternative cancer treatments, the truth about air purifiers, GMOs or genetically modified organisms, how to avoid brands that are made with those, and all sorts of other alternative therapies. But yeah, I think it's important for all of us to support the truth wherever we see it, to lead as many people as we can to it, first of all, to educate ourselves and then lead other people to this truth, because we certainly, it's going to be in our interest to wake up as many people as possible. So I really support the work of the work that you're doing, John, and I hope that you're extremely successful and that your word goes out far and wide. I thought I might ask, is there maybe a parting comment or two that you have, or maybe something that you would wanted to have mentioned before we close this off?
Well, I think I've summed up pretty much what I have to say here. All of us have a tremendous amount of imagination and creative talent, whether or not we believe that. And so in living our lives, the directions we take, the strategies that we come up with and invent for example, maintaining and expanding freedom, this can be something that no one has ever thought of, or it can be worked out in ways that haven't been done before. Don't sell yourself short. Don't think that you can only work along certain established lines. There are possibilities untapped. There is unlimited freedom, regardless of what governments and their allies try to tell you. And it's your own personal individual freedom that's important, and it all starts with you, the individual. You have freedom. You have power. You have creative power. You have imagination. It's there. It's always there. It never goes away. And you can use it to make tremendous things happen. So that would be my parting shot.
Well, I really appreciate it, John, and you know.
Thank you so much. This has been very good.
Yes,
I really.
I'm sorry.
I like the work. Like the work that you're doing, and I appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay, and thank you. We're all on this together, and I think with enough of us pushing the truth out there, it's going to keep turning the tide on this whole thing. There is an Achilles heel, and I think we're hitting at it. So with that, I want to thank everybody for being with us today, and John also, and I want to say that certainly you'll want to also join us tomorrow. We'll have an equally exciting presentation by Duncan O'Finian, who was a subject of the MK Ultra program, Project Talent. So we look forward to having you be with us tomorrow, and look for this recording to be posted shortly after this webinar today. You'll find it at republicmagazine.com/webinar, and take a look at the menu of items there and check out a lot of them. There's some really good information. With that, thank you, everyone, and we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conference.